Hey, Jackie.
Hey, Elsie.
Welcome to Six Impossible Things Before Breakfast. And this is a Sixlet episode. And Jackie is up this week.
We're both
doing it, but Jackie wrote it.
And I'm super excited because this is like my most favorite topic of all time. If you've been a longtime listener, you'll know that I'm literally fucking obsessed with the CIA. And so this week we are talking about CIA operations. And before we even get started, I want to talk about something I read this week that I ended up sending to LC that inspired this sixlet, which is Havana Syndrome. LC, do you remember the article that I sent you?
Yes. Why don't you explain to them kind of what it is?
So I was scrolling on my phone. And I don't know about y'all's phones, but like when I open up my little browser thing, I have an Android. And so it like suggests articles to me based on like my likes. So I found this article that was like, I can't even remember the title of the article now, but it was basically like Havana Syndrome strikes again. And I'm like, what the fuck is Havana Syndrome? So I click on the article. And apparently there were like CIA officers who were in Havana who were asleep, by the way, and heard this weird, super loud noise. And like immediately after hearing the noise, they started experiencing like facial and ear pain, and they got really nauseous, and like they just started having all these strange symptoms. And that was like the first instance of this. And then like there have been numerous reports since then. And like most of the reports have come from CIA officers and their family members, which is very strange. And so it leads people to assume that maybe like there's some sort of attack going on. I don't know. It's very weird. What do you think, Elsie?
Well, the weirdest part to me is that they said they could step out of it. So, like, yeah, when they were in one place, they would have the symptoms, and then they could, like, step out of their symptoms, and it would just go away.
Like, they could physically move to another location.
And the fact that this is not a wider known story is really weird.
Yeah, and there are a ton of reports. Like, a lot of them are coming from Europe right now, apparently. It's very odd. So Google Havana Syndrome, read up on this, let us know what you think. It's very weird.
It sounds alien to me, but what do I know?
It sounds super sketchy to me.
So weird.
Okay, so like I said, this week we're going to be doing different CIA operations. We're going to be talking a lot about that. So I'm going to go ahead and read off all my sources for this week. So the first was History.com, What Was Operation Paperclip by Laura Shum. History.com, MK Ultra, History.com editors. CoffeeOrDie.com, 3 Insane CIA Operations That You've Probably Never Heard Of by Matt Frattis. Wikipedia.org, John Chambers. STSTworld.com, The Acoustic Kitty Project, Weird Feline Spies of the 60s by, and I am so sorry, I'm about to butcher your name, Dipanahana Mukherjee.
Mukherjee? I don't know.
It's very strange. Mukherjee? Not that that's a bad name. I just can't read it. I'm very sorry. Wikipedia.org, Operation Northwoods, and Mike.com, 11 popular songs the CIA uses to torture people in the War on Terror by Tom Barnes. So, jumping right in. Number one, we have Operation Paperclip. So, at the end of World War II, America and Britain decided to team up and scour occupied Germany for any and all information pertaining to military, scientific, and technological development research that they could get their hands on. The Combined Intelligence Objectives Subcommittee were tasked with confiscating war-related documents, interrogating German scientists, and searching German research facilities. During this search, they made an incredible discovery in a very unlikely place, a toilet at Bonn University. Mm-hmm. What they found inside of the toilet was dubbed the Ausenberg List. It was a catalog of scientists and engineers that had worked with the Third Reich. So, yeah. So, originally called Operation Overcast and later renamed Operation Paperclip, the newly formed Joint Intelligence Objective Agency pored over the Ozenberg List and recruited and relocated 1,600 German scientists and their families to work for America during the Cold War.
What?
Oh. So, the goal of this operation was to use the scientists to develop rockets and other biological and chemical weapons, and also to keep the information that the German scientists had out of Soviet hands. President Harry S. Truman did give permission to the CIA for this operation, but specifically forbade them from recruiting any former or active Nazi members or Nazi supporters. But they decided to do it anyway and whitewashed any incriminating evidence of war crimes from the scientists' records because they deemed their knowledge essential to the country's post-war efforts.
I think that they're, like, rewarded for being so evil.
Dude, just wait.
We've heard story after story about them recruiting Nazi scientists, and it's like, dude, figure it out yourself.
It's terrible, dude. So, one recruit, Werner von Braun, played a key role in developing the V2 rockets that the Nazis used to torment England during the war. He, along with a score of other Nazi rocket scientists, were brought to Fort Bliss, Texas, and White Sands Proving Grounds, New Mexico, as quote-unquote War Department special employees to develop rockets for the United States. Von Braun went on to become director of NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center and the chief architect of the Saturn V launch vehicle, which we used to put numerous astronauts on the moon. So in conclusion, our government employed tons of Nazi scientists, totally ignoring their egregious war crimes so that we could stay just a few steps ahead of the Soviets.
And how did they get their knowledge? They did it from horrible war crimes. Like,
yep. They basically
benefited from the Nazis. Like,
we did. And like, they wanted the Nazi scientists and engineers because they knew how terrible the information was that they had. So we recruited them to our side because we deemed that better than having the Soviets have that information, which, okay, yeah, true. We obviously wouldn't want that used against us. But at the same time, that completely, like,
they should have all been in prison anyway.
Exactly. Like I was going to say, like, there is no accountability for their actions and the choices that were, which, you know,
and
who
I'm
knows?
I'm sure they got paid a crazy amount to do it.
Oh, you, like, literally, the dude worked for fucking NASA. Come on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, everybody's favorite space program, NASA, used Nazi scientists. So, think about that.
Jesus. Okay. So, number two is Project MK Ultra. During the height of the Cold War, the U.S. government was convinced that Soviet, Chinese, and North Korean agents were using various brainwashing techniques on American prisoners of war. So in retaliation, Alan Dulles, director of the CIA, director of the CIA approved Project MK Ultra in 1953. Project MK Ultra is arguably the most notorious CIA operation of all time and potentially their most heinous. It involved more than 150 human experiments where the CIA gave test subjects psychedelic drugs, paralytics, and electroshock therapy to assess the potential use of LSD and other drugs for mind control, information gathering, and psychological torture. Now, some of the subjects willingly signed up for the experiments. However, many of the participants were tested without their knowledge or consent. Because of the clandestine nature of this operation, the CIA conducted these experiments on people who were vulnerable and unable to become a threat. The poor, psychiatric patients, prisoners, and many others. The tests were conducted at universities, hospitals, and prisons across the United States and Canada. One side project within MK Ultra was Project Midnight Climax, For this project, the CIA hired sex workers to lure unsuspecting men to CIA safe houses. When the men arrived at the safe houses, they were dosed with LSD, often while simultaneously being given cocktails. The CIA observed the subjects from behind two-way mirrors, and the experiments were recorded with hidden devices disguised as electrical outlets. They basically wanted to see the effect that LSD would have on the men's behavior. These experiments were conducted in San Francisco and Marin County, California, and in New York City. The program had little oversight, and the CIA agents involved admitted that a freewheeling, party-like atmosphere prevailed. An agent named George White wrote in 1971, "Of course I was a very minor missionary, actually a heretic, but I toiled wholeheartedly in the vineyards because it was fun, fun, fun. Where else could a red-blooded American boy lie, kill, and cheat, steal, deceive, rape and pillage with the sanction and blessing of the All Highest?" That's a piece of shit.
Yup.
The CIA notoriously destroyed most records of MK Ultra when it officially came to end in 1973.
And like, here's the thing about MK Ultra. People like have this impression that they only used LSD, and that's just not true. So during MK Ultra and the well over 150 human experiments that they did, they tested LSD, MDMA, heroin, magic mushrooms, whatever those are called, I can't remember.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, so they used all, they were very interested in like mind altering drugs at that point because they wanted to see how it could benefit them in their use of like prisoners of war and such.
While simultaneously telling everybody it was the devil's drug. And
well, yeah, they wouldn't want just Johnny regular to be able to like go have fun with LSD. Oh, they had to make it fucking suck. So anyway, everybody should read about MK Ultra and Midnight Climax because it is very interesting, and I can't cover like all of it in a tiny podcast, but yeah, you should read about it.
Sorry, I'm losing my microphone, so it's probably making a bunch of noise.
Okay. I heard it and I wondered if it fell, but I wasn't sure.
It did, and now it won't stay up. Okay, I'm just gonna hold it. Okay.
So, our number three is John Chambers and the CIA. John Chambers might not be a name that immediately rings a bell, but he was a pretty big deal. First and foremost, he was a movie makeup and prosthetic artist, most famously known for creating Dr. Spock's famous pointed ears and for his work on Planet of the Apes.
Cool.
And as if that wasn't enough awesomeness for one lifetime, he was also contracted by the CIA not once, but numerous times. He famously assisted the CIA during the Iran hostage crisis, creating disguises and fabricating an entirely fake sci-fi movie called Agro as a cover.
I gotta stop you. That's a typo. It's actually Argo.
Oh, it is. You're right. Argo. So he created this totally fake sci-fi movie called Argo as a cover to fool the Iranians, helping six American hostages escape. And that is a story in and of itself that I'm going to have to cover more thoroughly when I have more time. But for now, I want to focus on his work in Russia. So back in the 1970s, Walter McIntosh, head of the CIA's disguise department at the time, was having all kinds of trouble. CIA operations officers could not travel around Russia without being followed by KGB surveillance teams. And spy work isn't all that effective if you're constantly being foiled by counterintelligence. So McIntosh enlisted the help of John Chambers, and together they came up with a plan. How were they going to fool the KGB agents, you might be asking yourselves? Inflatable sex dolls. Yes, you heard correctly, sex dolls. So, the idea was two CIA agents would get into a car and the passenger would have an ordinary box sitting on his lap. When the CIA agents noticed that they were being tailed by the KGB, they would create enough distance from the tail car, called a gap, and while rounding a corner, the passenger would open the box and then sneak out of the car, leaving the inflatable sex doll in its place. John Chambers' job was to fashion the dolls to look like males, because most of the agents at that time were males, complete with fedoras, to trick KGB agents into thinking that there were two people still in the car, allowing the actual agents to run off doing whatever it is that spies do. These contraptions were called JIBs, short for Jack in the Box, and were very successful.
That's so cool.
It was really neat. Like apparently there's a museum, I think in Washington, D.C., where you can go see these things. It's super funny and cool. Because
Ozzy Osbourne and Jack Osbourne had a show where they would travel around and go, and they went to the spy museum in D.C. And it was so cool. They had like the little, you know, when they had like carrier pigeons, they would have,
yes,
like, they had like the little things that they would carry. They had like suppository things that they would
shoot
up their butts. So they had like, they had all kinds of stuff.
I almost talked about like the CIA's use of pigeons and then decided that I would save that for another time in favor of the sex dolls, of course.
Oh, well, of course. I mean, that you always gotta go with sex dolls. Okay, so number four is Project Acoustic Kitty. We all know that cats are masters of stealth. During the Cold War, the CIA saw a bunch of cats hanging around one of their headquarters and thought to themselves, huh, you know, cats are pretty sneaky, and it's not unusual to see them in random places. Why don't we use them to spy on Soviets? And thus, Project Acoustic Kitty was born. They believed with the right training and equipment, cats could be instrumental in gathering information. People have never had a cat before?
Apparently not.
So they hired a vet to perform a procedure on a test cat, which involved implanting a small radio transmitter on its back and a microphone in its ear canal. These two devices needed to be connected somehow, so a wire was placed across its fur along with batteries to power the two devices. Cats are similar to humans and are able to distinguish between various noises. The CIA believed it could be possible to train cats to eavesdrop only on selective and relevant conversations, unlike mechanical bugs that record everything in their vicinity. As you can imagine, there were some bumps along the way. For one, cats are pretty small, so that meant that the batteries they used had to be pretty small, which led to the batteries dying very frequently. Another problem was that the cat would inevitably get hungry. I don't know about you, but when I'm hungry, I can only focus on one thing, food. As it turns out, this is what happens to the cat. So the cat would be on a training mission and randomly get hungry, causing it to leave a mission and search for food. To combat this, the CIA equipped the cat with a wire that sent signals to the cat's brain or neural system to overrule its hunger impulses and stay on the mission at hand. It took 5 years and $20 million, which in today's money would be $160 million, to complete Project Acoustic Kitty. The first real mission was simple. The cat was supposed to eavesdrop on and record a conversation between two Soviets at a park in Washington, D.C. Sorry. This is awful, but it's kind of funny. As soon as they released Acoustic Kitty, he darted across the street and was promptly squashed by an oncoming taxi. With the death of that poor cat, the CIA decided to scrap the entire project. They didn't think that would happen. Like,
I honestly don't know what they were thinking, because I'm just thinking, like, have you ever seen a cat like out and about on the town? Like, they are just off the ground.
Especially after you've just put all this shit into them, of course they're gonna run away from you.
They spent $20 million
to have a cat run over.
And then they're like, well, I guess this is fucking stupid.
Yeah, and then they were like, we're not even gonna try it again. It's over. Can you imagine being the person watching? Be like, oh, fuck.
Well, they were probably sitting there like, wow, I'm not sure how we didn't anticipate this.
Yeah, maybe we should have thought about this more.
Oh, God. I couldn't wait for you to read that one.
That was hilarious. It was awful, but hilarious.
It is. I mean, I'm obviously super sad about the cat, but, like, also, like, you didn't... What dumbasses. Okay. Number five is Operation Northwoods. So before I get into the basics of Operation Northwoods, I want to talk about false flag operations, just in case anybody doesn't know what that is. A false flag operation is a political or military act orchestrated in such a way that it appears to have been carried out by a party that is not, in fact, responsible. So, basically, it's when somebody plans for something to happen and carries out that thing and then blames it on somebody else.
Like the Princess Bride.
Yes. Okay. Exactly. So, Operation Northwoods was a proposed false flag operation in which the U.S. government wanted to initiate acts of terror against its own people and then blame Cuba for it so that we would have an excuse to wage war against Cuba. Fidel Castro had taken power in Cuba in 1959 and began allowing communists into the new Cuban government, nationalizing U.S. businesses, and improving relations with the Soviet Union, arousing the concern of the U.S. military because of the Cold War. So, the possibilities detailed in the document Operation Northwoods included the possible assassination of Cuban immigrants, sinking boats of Cuban refugees on the high seas.
Oh my gosh.
Hijacking planes to be shot down or given the appearance of being shot down. Blowing up a U.S. ship and orchestrating violent terrorism in U.S. cities. Like they wanted to, I'm pretty sure the cities were like Miami and then Washington, D.C. They wanted to just like start doing random acts of terror in those two places and then blame Cuba for it. Oh, so, long story short, the U.S. government is fucked, but the proposals were rejected by President John F. Kennedy. So they did not.
It gives a little bit more weight to the whole 9/11 was an inside job.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people think that those people are crazy, but it's not that crazy when you consider like, all the things that the CIA has done.
Yeah.
The CIA, like, there are so many things that I didn't cover in this six lit that we could have, because that wasn't even, like, their first attempt or even the second attempt that they had done against Fidel Castro and Latin America and blah, blah, blah. Like, it goes deep. Like, Project Mongoose, like, there are so many that people should read about.
They're just jacked up.
It's crazy.
Okay, so number six is music torture. Did you know that the CIA uses music to torture people? Well, now you do. In the 2000s, the CIA implemented their enhanced interrogation program using music torture to create fear and disorient and prolong capture shock in prisoners. Sergeant Mark Hatzell, a member of the U.S. Psychological Operations Team, described the efficacy of the tactic. If you play it for 24 hours, your brain and body functions start to slide and your train of thought starts to slow down and your will is broken. That's when we come in and talk to them. British citizen Rual Ahmed described the process in a 2008 interview with Reprieve investigators. I can bear being beaten up. It's not a problem. Once you accept that you're going to get into the interrogation room and be beaten up, it's fine. You can prepare yourself mentally. But when you're being psychologically tortured, you can't. He said he had been exposed to the torture numerous times to a variety of music. It makes you feel like you're going mad. You lose the plot, and it's very scary to think that you might go crazy because of all the music, because of the loud noise, and because after a while you don't hear the lyrics at all. All you hear is heavy banging. So what songs do they use? Well, a very random assortment, as it turns out. They have used The Real Slim Shady by Eminem, Dirty by Christina Aguilera, I Love You, the Barney theme song, Saturday Night Fever by the Bee Gees, the Meow Mix theme song, Beautiful People by Marilyn Manson, and We Are the Champions by Queen. I feel like I could listen to those songs for 24 hours and not go crazy.
I don't know. The I Love You theme song.
Meow Mix would be real rough. Or even probably Saturday Night Fever would probably be rough. But Simply Dirty by Christina Aguilera. But I could listen to Eminem and Queen and Marilyn Manson probably.
That article, people should look that up. I think it was called like 11 songs the CIA uses to torture people in the war against terrorism. It was on Mike.com. But like there were like quotes from people who had dealt with this torture before. And they say like, it's crazy. It just makes you go insane.
That's crazy.
I had no idea.
I want to try it and see how long it takes me to be like, okay, stop.
Because, like, they'll...
I'm sure it's blaring.
Oh, yeah. And they can't sleep or anything like that. And I think the guy who had to listen to Eminem had to listen to it for, like, 20 days straight.
Oh. I was thinking it was, like, 24 hours.
Well, I think that's, like, the low point, and they'll do it as long as they need to.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we will see you guys next week with... can't remember. I think it's a long episode.
Potentially a long episode.
Whatever it is, we'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.